through scales or cartilage or bone, and you show no quarter. You stay on your quarry until you've found the soft spot that brings death, and you put the fear into the rest by gutting your victim, ripping out his liver and devouring it. As he was expected to, Wilhuff took his uncle's instructions to heart by demonstrating in space the metal he had shown on the carrion. The incident that would garner the most attention in the academies he would later attend was one involving Iriadu's ore convoys and a Senex sector pirate group known as Ka'ana's Marauders. Loans from off-world financiers had enabled the Greater Seswena to create the Outland region's security force. But the militia had far too few vessels to protect every Lomite shipment travelling between Iriadu and the core. Making the most of the shortage, several pirate groups had forged an alliance, wherein some would monitor or engage Outland's warships, while others preyed on the unguarded convoys. The titular head of the alliance was a human female known only as Ka'ana, whose audacious raids throughout the Senex sector had made her something of a folk hero. A native of the core world Brental IV, she was the only daughter of a former bodyguard for House Cormund, who had accepted a lucrative offer to leave the core to oversee security for House Elegin on the world Asmeru. Trained in combat by her father and eager for adventure, Ka'ana became the mistress of the youngest son of the noble house, who was himself leading a secret life as a pirate, and whose group Ka'ana eventually joined. Fighting alongside the members of her lover's crew, Ka'ana lived a colourful and bawdy life until the young Elegin was captured, sentenced to death, and executed on Carfedion. Having by then given birth to Elegin triplets, Ka'ana dedicated herself to avenging the death of her paramour by targeting ships and settlements strewn across the Senex-Juvex sectors. At the point she became a nuisance to Iriadu, she had already become the subject of breathtaking holonet tales and scandalous rumours, having survived starship collisions and starfighter crashes, blaster bolt and vibroblade wounds, and countless fistfights and personal duels. Said to be as fast on the draw as a circus sharpshooter and as talented on the dance floor as a double-jointed Twi'lek, Ka'ana had chewed off her own infected hand while awaiting rescue on an isolated moon, and was known to wear artificial arms and at least one leg from the knee down, in addition to an ocular implant and who knew what else. Twice she had been captured and sentenced to lengthy terms in maximum security prisons, and had escaped from each thanks to daring rescues mounted by her soldiers who all but worshipped her. Only her link to House Elegin had saved her from execution, but following an encounter with judicial forces, during which she destroyed 6 ships, the Republic also put a high price on her head, and it was that bounty that had landed her in the Greater Seswena, a sector rarely, if ever, patrolled by judicials, notwithstanding repeated entreaties by Iriadu and other harassed worlds. Lomite convoys typically comprised up to a score of unpiloted container ships, slave-rigged to a crude shepherd vessel, now and then with an armed gunboat trailing. Each container was capable of jumping to hyperspace, but during those years, before the era of affordable and reliable navicomputers, the convoys had to navigate by hyperspace buoys located along the route. And experience had proved that jumping in single file was safer than going to hyperspace in clusters, even though the maneuver left the containers vulnerable to attack on their reversions to real space. Outland capital ships would ride herd on valuable shipments, but ordinary convoys frequently found themselves targeted by Ka'ana's flotilla of deadly frigates and corvettes. With the swiftest ships engaging the shepherd vessel, the rest would deliver boarding parties to some of the containers and separate them from the pack. Once the slave rigs of the ore carriers were disabled, the boxy vessels would be slaved to a dedicated pirate frigate and jumped in line to hyperspace. By the time Outland could respond to the distress calls, Ka'ana's crews were already selling the stolen ore on the black market, or turning it over to the companies that had hired them to carry out the raids. The convoys became easier and easier pickings, and Iriadu Mining began to accept that it was more cost-effective to surrender the containers than to risk having their overpriced lead or follow ships destroyed in defensive engagements. The company attempted to trick the pirates by placing empty container ships among the fully loaded ones, but the dummy ships only prompted an increase in the number of raids. The company also tried concealing explosive devices and even, on a few occasions, parties of armed spacers in some of the containers. Not once, however, did Ka'ana's raiders take the bait, and over time the strategy of including dummy containers and armed troopers was also deemed too expensive. Attempts were made to predict which containers the pirates would target, but in the end, Iriadu Mining's battle analysts decided that Ka'ana was choosing containers at random. Just coming into his own as a lieutenant in Outland's anti-piracy task force, Wilhuff refused to accept the disheartening analysis and devoted himself to a detailed study of the raids in which Ka'ana had participated, failures and successes both, in the hope of deciphering her method for choosing containers. Her attacks weren't at all like the hunts he had witnessed on the Carrion Plateau, where solitary predators or prides would select the stragglers, the young, or the weakest of the herd animals, and for some time it indeed appeared that her choices had neither rhyme nor reason. But Wilhuff remained convinced